You're listening to episode 328 of Women Worldwide, Women's Health and Wellness. How much do you know about the range of health issues women face as they age? I've got a guest today who has a lot to share on this topic, so stay tuned to learn more. Hi, I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. I've spent an entire career helping women to share stories, nurture relationships, grow their brands, but most of all, to find their voices so they can make a difference. Do you feel stuck? Do you want to power up your own voice? Women Worldwide features the stories of passionate women who have navigated big career challenges and some of the toughest changes. These professionals offer deep insights and advice to inspire you and to help you uncover what's holding you back. Let Women Worldwide ignite your passion so you can excel in life. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Women Worldwide. Thank you so much for tuning in and for being here today. Well, as you know, every week it is a new guest with an exciting journey and a lot of passion and inspiration and advice for you. So let's get right to today's topic. It is women's health and wellness. There's a whole range of issues and information that women need to know as they get older, and I've got a guest who has plenty to share. Joining me on the show is Dr. Angela DeRosa. And Dr. DeRosa is a DO, an MBA, and a CPE. She has been changing or working to change the face of women's health and wellness. She has 25 years of experience in the medical field, both in pharma and in clinical practice. And she educates her patients on some of the realities and the risk factors when it comes to health and wellness. Dr. DeRosa, welcome. Welcome to Women Worldwide.
Thank you so much. I'm so delighted to be here. And I'm just always thrilled when I talk to people like yourself who are so passionate about women's health and trying to help change that paradigm right there with me.
Well, thank you. I want to do my part. And having you on the show is really a good step, because I know there's a lot of listeners out there and viewers who realize that as we get older, things change. So we want to dive into that discussion. But first, I always ask the question, how did you get on the road to becoming a doctor with this quest to change the face of women's healthcare?
Well, I always knew I wanted to be a physician since I was the age of 8. My grandmother took me to the Chicago Science Museum of Industry and Science, and I walked through that great big heart. For those of you may not have been to Chicago, go through it, and it was just fascinating. But it really wasn't until much later in my career that women's health and hormonal health specifically was where I needed to be. And it's always that professional and personal, I think, collision in life that drives some of our greatest passions. And I went through menopause at 35, which meant I was having perimenopausal symptoms while I was going through medical school and residency. And the way I was treated during that time by my professional colleagues, patronistic, demeaning, and with complete disregard to what I was going through, would be the nicest things I could say about that experience. And I was smack dab in the middle of the profession. I was basically patted on the head and said, there, sweetheart, go get some more rest, exercise, and eat better, when I was in the throes of perimenopause and nobody knew what was happening to me. And by the time I was 30, I was on 5 different medications that I didn't need to control symptoms of menopause. So at that point, I made it a mission that I was not going to allow women to be treated the way I was. And I was going to learn everything I could about hormone therapies and how it impacted not only how we feel, but preventing illness.
Well, that is a really important mission. And I mean, just to hear you say at such an early age to be perimenopausal and then go through menopause. Just a quick question. Is that something that could be stress related? Is that within your own DNA? Do you even know why it would start at such a young age?
There's many factors that can lead to what we call premature ovarian failure. So that's when you have menopause before the age of 40. So after that, it's considered quote unquote normal. But before that, it's definitely premature. Now, certainly when I look at people and through my education over the decades, environmental factors certainly play a role. I mean, God knows what's in our water. The antibiotics, radiation exposures, toxins, chemicals can all take serious damage to these tiny little organs that are doing their best to survive. But a lot of times this is genetically imprinted too, where a lot of women you start to look back in family histories, most women are going to go through menopause around the same age as their mother or their grandmother. But unfortunately, a lot of those women era had a lot of hysterectomies because they were highly prevalent during that time. So we may not know the true ages of their ovarian failure. But I think mine was probably a combination of stress, genetics, who named it, but or just sheer dumb luck.
So yeah, I mean,
which happens in medicine all too often.
Exactly. So having your experience and knowing what you know now and working with women, what are some of the health-related issues or what should listeners and viewers be looking out for? What are some of those issues?
We tend to joke about menopause, and it's a funny topic in a lot of ways. I mean, we're sitting there drenching and have all the musicals made about the symptoms of menopause, but they can significantly alter your quality of life. If you're unable to sleep because of the hot flashes in the middle of the night that wake you up and just drenched in sweat, constant temperature imbalances, irritability, new onset mood disorders such as panic, anxiety, depression. I mean, these have huge impacts on our life. We often think it's just about hot flashes or low sex drive, but it's really about our ability to sleep, our ability to process information. It's our ability to retain information, executive function thinking, our ability to function and get through the day-to-day just normal stressors of life. If you don't have proper serotonin from your hormones being imprinted in your brain, you're going to not function well. And unfortunately, in medicine, a lot of women come to doctors with those symptoms. And what do? They throw us on antidepressants. We're not depressed. We're hormonally imbalanced that are leading to those symptoms. But one of the things that I find just most remarkable is that we don't talk about the medical consequences of hormone deficiencies. Mm. So number one, testosterone, when we get deficient in testosterone, and mind you, testosterone is our most abundant hormone in women. And let me repeat that. It is our most abundant hormone. We make actually more of it on a day-to-day basis than estradiol, but all we talk about is estrogens in women.
You're right. I would have thought
nobody, and even most physicians don't even recognize that. And testosterone is essential for glucose metabolism. When we lose our testosterone, we become insulin resistant, pre-diabetic, diabetic, which leads to cardiovascular risk. And it happens as we lose our testosterone in our 30s and our 40s. But instead, medicine gives us more medications or tells us to go work out more or eat better. And we're basically banging our head against the wall because nobody's getting better and because we haven't fixed the root cause. Or you look at estrogen and testosterone in bone health and their ability, estrogen and the ability to keep the arteries soft and pliable, which can lead to blood pressure issues, or all that inflammation that's caused from those hormone imbalances leads to cancer risks and dementias. But we, once again, focus in just on hot flashes. And here's what's going to probably alarm you the most.
Yes, already alarmed.
But we treat men with reverence when it comes to their testosterone deficiency. And they've got erectile dysfunction drugs for their ED. They've got over 31 testosterone commercially available, FDA-approved products for their testosterone deficiency, which causes all the same things it does in women. We have zero products FDA-approved because we've been discounted and disregarded over the decades and decades of health. But we get antidepressants, they get what they need.
So what about all the hormone replacement therapy that's not FDA-approved?
Well, we're talking specifically testosterone. So now we have estrogens that are approved. And mind you, a lot of them are inappropriate for women. Number one, when you're looking at hormone replacement, it needs to be first and foremost bioidentical, mm-hmm. meaning it mimics the hormone that comes out of your ovary, 17-beta estradiol, testosterone, progesterone. Now, there are some FDA-approved commercially available products that are bioidentical, like Bivel.patch, esterase cream, but a lion's share of them are synthetic and aren't bioidentical. Number two is we keep getting pushed pills for our estrogen replacement. But the second you swallow that estrogen pill into your digestive system, it has to process through your liver. And when it does that, it clotting factors, which increase your risk for heart attack, stroke, and blood clots.
Oh, goodness.
So if you deliver hormones in a non-pill format, like with creams, gels, patches, pellets, injectables, it all avoids that. But you've got to find a bioidentical equivalent. For testosterone, we have nothing on the market. So we have to compound it, which is the compounding pharmacy space has really done a terrific job at filling the gap and the need for women that the commercially available FDA space does not. And largely because they've just discounted women in research, they've discounted us in our symptomology and what we need. and they just don't think it's relevant for us, which is incredibly, incredibly shameful in our medical community.
Absolutely. How much does the average woman know what you're sharing right now?
Very, very little. What they focus in on, and I've been doing this over 25 years now, the number one thing is they talk about estrogen and hot flashes, mm-hmm. and they talk about breast cancer risk. Those yes. are the three big discussion points. But they're missing a whole side of it, that testosterone piece, which actually testosterone we used to use to treat breast cancers. It is our most vital and abundant hormone, and we don't talk about it. And to go back to even the estrogen study that scared the heck out of women about hormones, when you actually broke down that study and took a good look at it over the next 10, 20 years, it was actually miscommunicated improperly throughout the media. And what really came out of that study was Premarin, which was the synthetic estrogen alone, actually decreased breast cancer risk in women. Prempro, which was the one that had the synthetic progestin added to it, showed neutral risk for breast cancer, and that all women between the ages of 50 to 59 benefited from a cardiovascular standpoint in both of those arms in that study. But nobody ever went back and talked about it. All we heard is 26% increase in breast cancer. But you have to understand statistics to know that you can manipulate information. That 26% wasn't what we call relative risk, but the absolute number was only 8 more women out of 10,000.
Oh,
that's way less scary when you hear it that way.
Oh,
and
sure.
They did the statistics wrong, and then they reported it wrong, and it never proved out. It was a neutral at worst, a beneficial effect at best. And testosterone is highly breast protective, and there's been multiple studies that are coming out, large ones over the last year or so, that show the benefit of testosterone on breast health. And actually, women who are undergoing treatment for breast cancer can take testosterone safely with estrogen blockade and actually reduce their recurrence rates over the general population. It's so much misinformation, and women are getting fed horrible, horrible stuff.
Well, it speaks to the media and headlines. And then you read a headline and you read something in an article that is just tip of the nose perspective and doesn't clearly dive into all of the points that you just mentioned. So that is really interesting. What about different generations? So each generation has a way of educating themselves or thinking about health and wellness. What's the difference between a Gen Xer and, let's say, a millennial in terms of
It's health? Fascinating to me when I worked at Procter & Gamble looking at kind of different demographics and then also just clinically seeing women over the years, they all approach it a little bit different. So if we look at our grandmas and our old aunties and grandmas, they were stoically moving through menopause and nobody really helped them. But what they did was they took a bunch of Xanax and drank their little cocktail.
I had no idea what my grandma was doing.
But if you look at a lot of little old ladies, almost a large majority of them have their little Xanax pills that they take at night to help control anxiety and symptomology. And frankly, I think just to deal with that. And then you move into the baby boomers and the kind of the Gen Xers, kind of like that right at the end of the beginning of the Gen X and late of baby boomers. Those women are not going quietly into the night because they were the women who were kind of the era free love, and they want their sexuality and they're open about it and they're demanding change in healthcare.
Yes.
And that's where this is all starting, is by that. They're seeking education. They're looking for it. They're looking for people like myself and validation mm-hmm. for what they're going through and demanding care and change. And that's what's started to happen. But what's kind of alarming right now is we're seeing kind of a more apathetic approach to women and their healthcare in this younger generation. They want
really?
All this electronics and device and easy access to information where they're getting all this bad information on the internet without actually talking to folks. But there's been large amount of pushback from governmental bodies, pharmaceutical agencies to put out misinformation to mislead this younger population. And they don't seem to care, which is more ironic.
Absolutely.
But they also haven't really gotten to the point where they're struggling with those symptoms yet, a lot of them.
So I'm wondering, maybe you could just share, where are some really good resources mm-hmm. where women can find beyond what the headlines are saying?
Yeah.
Because it's so important.
Well, unfortunately, a lot of it is being fed by pharmaceutical agencies who have a huge stake in what happens financially with women. So you have to be cautious in where you get that information. There are organizations that are evolving. Like, for instance, if you go to my website, drhotflash.com, we have resources there. There's a book that I have that I wrote called A Women's Hormonal Health Survival Guide, How to Prevent Your Doctor from Slowly Killing You. And at the back of that has a lot of resources, has checklists about your symptoms, what questions to ask your doctor.
Oh, good.
And then also what things you should avoid, what things are red flags that you need to run, and also resources on good information. And we also put a lot of blogs and different information out on there too. But organizations such as the Age Management Medical Group, there's Mary Solomon about thyroid. So there's links to a lot of that stuff in that book and on my website. But it's important to look at the information, because having just even a little bit of knowledge about, so for instance, what we call it is a p-value. And a p-value in a study says, is the study even statistically significant? Meaning, is it valid?
Right.
But a lot of studies get put out there with non-statistical data, and the media picks them up as a dangerous headline because it sells. But it's not even relevant because it didn't even show statistical significance. So we have to be cautious what we're fed in the media and
absolutely
really look closely, get the education. And the number one thing I always tell women are trust your bodies and trust yourself. If you know something's wrong and you're not getting the answers or something that validates what you're feeling, you're in the wrong place.
Right. No, that is absolutely, that's a great point. Maybe you could share with us some kind of an aha moment that you've had through your journey, you know, going to DO and MBA and CPD. Is there anything that stands out as a learning moment that you want to share?
It's really hard to narrow them down to a few, but there's been some major points. I think one of the biggest ones when I personally realized what was happening to myself and how poorly I was treated. And that was an alarming aha. And then also realizing over the years that there is a huge body of organizations that are really working against women and women's healthcare. Pharmaceutical agencies, and mind you, that they do great things and treat a lot of wonderful conditions. But when it comes to hormonal health, there is a huge push to prevent us from getting the therapies we need so that they can make millions of dollars on the meds that they want to give us. And having worked at Procter & Gamble for 10 years as their medical director, and it was a wonderful company, wonderful experience. I learned so much. They gave me so many, as I helped them launch a testosterone patch for women outside of the U.S., it was an amazing time. So I know that pharmaceutical companies can be really wonderful, but I also know that there's this nefarious side that we have to be cautious of. And
right.
I have to say the aha thing is that sometimes you have to be less naive when it comes to our own healthcare and less trusting. And that was really hard to come to grips with, especially being a physician and having been in the pharmaceutical industry.
Does that mean asking more questions based on how you're feeling?
Ask more questions, get to the answer, and again, trusting yourself and that you know your body better than anybody else. And with the rare exception of the absolute crazy female that is not the usual person in my practice, women know what's going on. They intuitively know something's wrong.
Yes, we have that inner GPS that guides us, right? We do.
And unfortunately, we're told to ignore it all the time.
I know. Don't listen. Everybody out there, don't listen. Trust your GPS. Dr. DeRosa, you had mentioned for your experience early on the stress. What do you tell somebody about managing stress? How do you manage stress? Do you have stress busters? Because stress makes menopause that much worse.
It is horrible, and it's one of the hardest things to manage and one of the hardest things to advise too, because I would be foolish in thinking, you know, say, oh, go just reduce your stress, that women are going to go off and do it. But we're our own worst enemies because we don't do good self-care. We take care of everybody else, but not ourselves. So I think it's important to recognize that if you're not well, your people, your families and your spouses are not going to do well around you, and really demanding and taking that time, not thinking of it as a selfish thing, but as a selfless thing to care for yourself. So things that I like to do, I mean, I like to do yoga. I like to go out and walk or hike and listen to a book and just kind of decompress, but also realizing that sometimes I just need to go away for a few days. I am I'm a very extroverted introvert, and I know that sometimes I need to go away to recharge. So going to a spa for a weekend, or just going to Cabo for a long week or something, just taking that time for yourself just to decompress and recharge. So I always tell people, when you think about stress, I mean, we talk about that 24/7 access, but if you go back to kind of the days when we were running around in loincloths and things, stress is really when you have a T-Rex chasing you all day long.
Right.
So
survival.
Our cell phones, our work is T-Rexes chasing us constantly, and our bodies never get out of that fight or flight mode. And it really causes a lot of damage to our bodies, and we need to walk away from it if we can.
Absolutely. Stress is the worst.
And most of it's self-induced.
And I mean, some stresses, I've had this conversation before, some stress is good when you can manage it and use it almost to pivot to the adrenaline for something that's new or exciting. But unfortunately, there is this ugly kind of stress.
And it's when it doesn't come down, when the norepinephrine is good and bursts, but it's supposed to be burst and gone, burst and gone. But we live in this constant state of highly elevated hormones that are not supposed to be there.
No. And you called yourself an extroverted introvert. I'm going to remember that. I don't think I've ever had anybody call themselves that. That's super interesting. Well, I can't even believe I'm going to ask you. You've given a lot of advice and you've shared great insights, but maybe just some parting advice for women, the Women Worldwide Network, about their health and wellness moving forward.
Yes. So just know that all of us are going to go through menopause, and you cannot fight Mother Nature. It's back in the day, we used to die before menopause. Now we're living a half or a third of our lives in that time frame. So we need to figure out how to embrace it and live well during that time. And my strong advice is not to let hormones scare you or discourage you, because they are essential molecules in our body that help us live happy lives, but also very healthy lives. And the second you lose those hormones, your body's on a slow march to death with a chronic illness. And those hormones are there when done properly, bioidentical, safe, with people who know what they're doing. Just don't go to your average person who doesn't have a clue on how to manage them. They are valuable weapons at preventing chronic illness. And we need to embrace them. We need to stop being afraid of them, because there is a huge body of people who are making tons of money off of our fear. And you need to properly educate yourself. Get the right information, get the real information, and don't be afraid. Because when I look at women, and there's a hormone, and I'm just going to use this quick analogy, and I know we got to wrap up, but there's a hormone in our brain that gets secreted when we go through menopause. It's called FSH, follicle stimulating hormone. And it is the hormone that goes down and beats the little ovary into doing its job to make estrogen. But when the ovary dies, it's beating a dead horse. But when you go through menopause, that hormone stays elevated till the day you die. That brain is trying to expend energy to beat your ovary to get it to produce hormones, because it needs it. If our bodies didn't need it, if our brain didn't need it, it would stop beating the ovary, but it doesn't. And it's a physiologic signal that our bodies are missing something. It's no different than if we order what's called a TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone. When that goes markedly elevated in patients, we treat patients with thyroid medicines all the time. But when our FSH goes markedly elevated, we ignore it, and it's wrong. And we need to start embracing what our bodies are telling us and give us back the hormones we need, and don't be afraid.
Absolutely. Don't be afraid of hormones. You can have healthy, happy hormones.
Yes, but done properly. That's
done properly. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, that was excellent advice. And last question, super easy. Where can people find out more about you, Dr. DeRosa, and your work?
Yes, you can go to my website. It's Dr. Hot Flesh. I trademarked that name. My
Love
friend
that.
Gave it to me years and years ago. But it's DR, so drdrhotflash.com. And you'll find there's information for the layperson, my books there. There's blogs, there's articles. There's also links for medical professionals who want to get trained in this area, which I do training across the globe for practices to help them incorporate this medicine. So lots of resources there. Hopefully they find them and use them, and also links to my clinic if they ever want their own care taken care of.
Excellent. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
You're welcome. What a pleasure. And thank you for having me.
Oh, it's such a pleasure to hear your journey, your advice. I think there's so much that women learn from this discussion. So thank you.
You're very welcome.
And thank you to all of you for tuning into Women Worldwide. I always say, keep the conversations going and the feedback coming. We appreciate all that you're sharing, not just the shows, but sharing how you're doing and how you're feeling. You know where to find me. I am on Twitter. I'm at Dee Breckenridge, or you can find me on LinkedIn. Okay, friends, until our next episode, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.